hold on. Pause. Stop. Wait. Time out. Before we start this month's episode with our guest N. Joseph Glass, I need to tell you that this is May of 2024 as we're recording this. In late April of 2024, Heidi Hausch, one of the narrators that we're going to talk about in today's episode, just took gold with the Independent Book Publishers Association Benjamin Franklin Award for Audiobook of the Year. Just another reason to listen to today's guest's book. And Heidi, congratulations. Now on with the show. Welcome in, everyone. We are so glad that you're here. Today, I'd like to say ciao and benvenuto. And I really hope that I said hello and welcome in Italian. This episode has a little bit of an international flair. That's right. My guest this month was born in New York, but now lives in Milan, Italy. That's Milan, Italy. See, I can't even speak a foreign language, but you guys all know that. So I would like to welcome from 4,996 miles away. Yes, I looked it up. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome N. Joseph Glass. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I've been so excited to talk to you. So you are the author of the Colonies series, Colonies Dawn, Colonies Fall, and Colonies End, and also the book that we're here to talk about today. It's called Overlap, The Lives of a Former Time Jumper. Now, everybody, before you jump on us and say, wait a minute, there's a grammatical error in that title, you're gonna have to listen to the audiobook. This book is more than a time travel story. It's about the human experience. It's about coping with loss and grief and the weight of decisions we make or avoid. It's about the need for redemption and the need for closure. It's a great, great product. It's narrated by Tom Hare and Heidi Hausch. And today we're going to talk with Neil about how the book came to be and about the audio. So let's start with, before we get into the book, let's get into you. Who are you? What makes Neil, Neil?
Good question. I think where I've lived and what I've experienced. Like I said, I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. So that was quite an experience. What I loved about that area was the cultural blending. We had people in my school is from a young age of all around the world. And so that kind of exposed me to more than just a narrow little segment of life. And then I lived in New Jersey for a while and then experienced the South. I was in Georgia outside of Atlanta for a number of years. That's where I raised my children. And now living in the north of Italy has just been fantastic. Totally new cultures, new foods. And being in the north of Italy, there's a blending of cultures from other European countries. So I just love that blend. Even without traveling terribly far, it just makes you see the world in a different view, I think. It gives a nice perspective to life and to the world we live in.
Yeah, I mean, we know that the northern part of America and the southern part of America give you certainly different experiences. So even though you spent a lot of time on this side of the pond, as they say over there, you got vastly different experiences, it sounds like.
Yeah, I did. It's a bit of a culture shock just moving from one place to another in the United States, as you know, because it's so vast, it's so big. The Northeast to the Southeast, very, very different cultures. But I've met fantastic people everywhere that I've lived. And that's been the glue that holds everything together, is getting to really know who people are outside of stereotypes and just interact with people. And I found great inspiration for creating characters from people I've met along the way. And that, as an author, gives great insight to really think of people. How would this person that I met some years ago, what would they do in this situation? And then you can kind of think and write realistic responses from characters, thinking of real people. So the more I've met, the more characters I have floating in my head.
I do the same with their voices. They end up in audiobook voice and audiobooks as characters. So,
oh, nice.
And are you able to speak Italian? Or are you?
I'm still working on it. I've been here for 8 years. It's still not very good. Enough to say that your introduction was good. You got it right. I could have a little conversations, nothing too deep, but I'm still working on it. Most of what I do and people I interact with speak to me in English. So I'm trying to be more immersive in the language and working on it. I'm getting there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a work in progress. You know, I'm still working on English. I don't do too well sometimes. So how about when you sit down to read? I know you sit down to write a lot, but what is it that you choose to read? What do you like to?
I'm mostly a sci-fi geek. It's my choice in television, films, and books. I like to read some series. I think the longest one I read so far is the Expanse series. It's 9 volumes and several novellas. I also like to branch out. I enjoy an occasional murder mystery. I just read a beautiful book that it deserves all the acclaim it gets, All the Light We Cannot See. Absolutely beautiful story. Not my typical, not science fiction at all. Just a beautiful fictitious story based on very real events from a very horrible time in human history. But it just shows the need to think beyond the stereotype and look at individuals. The way that those characters are developed through that book is just beautifully done. An inspiration to authors as well as just to humans about the human experience. After that, I dove right back into science fiction. That's kind of where I stay. It's my wheelhouse. That's what I write.
Right. If I'm not mistaken, your Colonies series, that's more along the science fiction. Can you talk about that series for a little bit?
Yeah, that didn't start as a book idea. It started just as looking at news and wondering where things were going. You know, the space race when I was young, very different from what it is today. Today we have billionaires building rockets and wanting to go beyond the moon and try to get to Mars. And there's all this idea that mankind's future is in colonizing Mars. And I started to think, there's no atmosphere on Mars. People would have to live in sealed colonies. It would take a long time before they'd ever be able to really go outside to live. What would it be like generation after generation? I put myself 200 years into a colony, established there, a small group of people with a very controlled life, never seeing outside. And I started imagining, what would their lives be like? What interaction would they have? Who would they be? What would they do all day? What would their hopes be? And then what problems would they encounter? And then I realized that just thinking about our possible future, I thought, there's a story here. And then I started writing it down. So that's where it all came from. The current space race turned into What If.
Hmm. So those books are available on Amazon.
Yes.
And I'm sure you can probably find them through your website, perhaps.
Yes. Yeah. There's a little write-up on my website. There's even, I have a video that introduces the series, like a trailer that tells you a little bit about it. And the first book in the series on Amazon is on special right now to get people interested in it. And it has an audiobook as well. The other two are coming, but book 1 of 3 is an audiobook. And what I like to tell people is the book 1 ends with a satisfying ending. It's complete on its own. So you don't have to even commit yourself to a trilogy. There's no cliffhanger at the end. I hope it leaves you wanting more. And that's what some recent reviews have said, that a really good start to the series. I want to see what happens next. But it does come to an end. So it is a standalone novel that also is the first of a series. And the audiobook is fantastic. The narrator did a great job, and she won it more as much as my writing. Her narration won it the 2023 Best Sci-Fi Audiobook from audioreviewer.com. So very, very excited about that.
Yeah, congratulations to both of you on the award.
Thank you.
That's Sabrina Pallarito that narrated that?
Yes.
Good, good. Yeah, so we'll give her a little plug there too.
Yeah, definitely.
It's nice to know that the each book kind of ends with, okay, that's as far as you have to be committed, like you said, but so it's a nice, satisfying read or listen.
I wanted it to be where if somebody didn't have the time to invest in a trilogy, they'd be happy with one book and they'd see how it ends. The completes the challenge, the problems of book one end, but it opens up a lot more possibilities. And book two does have more of a you want to finish with book three, as it leaves things a little bit more open. But I kind of follow this pattern that I've seen in a lot of trilogies. Complete first story, second story. Things turn a little bit sour for the lead, and you wonder what's going to happen to them, and the resolve comes in the third volume.
And if it seems to work for the big guys, we'll try it too, right? Yeah.
Exactly,
That's
exactly.
good. Well, so you have this other title that you wrote that is a pretty 180 from science fiction. It's called Overlap, The Lives of a Former Time Jumper. Let's address the title first. There is a grammatical error in the first glimpse of it, but it works 100%.
It does. It does. Normally, you're thinking of one person, they would have one life. But the advantage of time jumping is it allows you to relive at least lengthy moments of your life. So every time the main character has gone into his invention, into his machine, he's relived a life. So he has over years lived many lives. So the one man has many lives, and so we hope the grammar police will accept that as the validation for the title.
It's very true. I have to tell you, when you and I started working together to bring this into audio, and I read the summary, and then I looked at the length of the manuscript that you sent along, I said, there is no way, there is no way he is going to tell this much of a story in this length of a manuscript. And I have to tell you did it so efficiently and so effectively. That I'm really interested in talking to you about this. So I'm not a movie guy. I don't watch movies. I don't like movies. I feel like there's no character development. There's no time to really develop a storyline. But I love theater because I feel every line in a play counts and everything is super important. I loved how clean Overlap is. Every word matters. Every scene is essential. And it's so simplistic in that you stripped it down to it's really two characters sitting in a living room having a conversation. What, tell me about the decision-making process. Nothing explodes in this book. There are no high-speed chases. Nobody jumps off of a building to leap to the other side. What were the challenges in creating such a captivating story with just dialogue?
That was a challenge. I was encouraged by comments on my first series that the dialogue is one of the things people enjoyed in my approach to my style of writing. So I thought I could, can lean into the dialogue a bit if that was one of my strengths, as people have said. But I wanted to focus on how Marcus, the main character, is looking back at his life. So I wanted to tell the story from the perspective of a man looking back. So we don't follow him in his youth through his stories. We listen to him tell them. And I've spent a lot of time around older people. Some have fascinating stories, some less so, but the vividness in which they love to tell them, that's always stuck with me. So I thought having Marcus tell the story near the end of his life, and finally, for the first time in his life, to reveal some of these secrets would be captivating enough. And I've seen a few very well done books, movies, even television programs where characters were developed in very short time. It's rare. It's usually they want to get to the explosions and the car chases and all this other stuff. But I've seen it done and I thought, let me give it a try. And I wanted to get the right length. And I'm very happy that a few readers have said they found the book actually the right length for the story. It doesn't drag, it doesn't rush, but it tells the story in the right amount of time. One person told me, oh, why don't you try to lengthen it and make it more of a full-length novel and you can charge a little bit more. I'm like, I don't think it needs it. It's complete. I'm happy with how it came to an end. And I think the story is concise enough to keep the interest from start to finish and tell it adequately. So I'm very happy with the way it turned out. And the length of it, I think, fits. How much more do we want two people talking? I think it's just enough to get the story done.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, you know, that I was absolutely wrong in my initial impression of, you know, how can this possibly be done? You gave a master's class on how it could be done. It's,
wow, thank
it's
you.
So well designed. So the story is basically Marcus sitting in his living room, and he is telling his story through this other character that you've used, Jessica, to kind of draw out. She's interviewing him.
Yep.
What do you want to say about Jessica?
Jessica is an interesting character. She comes in a bit one-dimensional, I think. She's a reporter. She really only has one or two interviews under her belt. She's a nobody in the world of reporting. But Marcus was really drawn to her from this one interview. She happened to interview the son of his former business partner. That's what got him to watch it to begin with. And he says that he liked her style, that it was very conversational. He didn't want question and answer interview. He wanted to talk. And he thought she would be a good person to do that. It's the first time he'd ever accepted an interview. And he invites her to his home to have this interview in a place where he's most comfortable. So she comes very eager to tell the story, and she's done a lot of research. Every time he brings something up, she seems to know what happened, but she wants what nobody else knows, what the research didn't tell her. She wants to know who Marcus is, what drove him, and why, when he built a successful business, multi-trillion dollar business on his invention, why did he just shut it down without warning? That really sticks in her. She wants to know what made him just say, I'm done, no explanation, shut down stores all over the world, and end this sensation he created called Vacations in Time. And so she comes with all this motivation, but she does what he wanted. She is conversational. She lets him speak, lets him tell the story with some carefully crafted questions to guide it along.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great description of how it works. You know this book well. You're there are a lot of authors who have yet to dip their toe into the waters of audiobooks. Can you talk about what was your experience like when, you know, both with Tom and Heidi, but also with Sabrina in your other series? What was it like when you started hearing your characters and your words read back to you from someone else's mind?
That's really interesting, because I actually started my very first book thinking, well, maybe I could do my own audiobook. And that was a mistake. I'm not a professional narrator. I don't have the right equipment. But I also I wanted a fresh perspective. And I appreciate how the narrators I've worked with so far, they get a complete view of the story. In fact, they usually like to read the whole thing so they know who the character is instead of just reading. But with Colony's Dawn, it fit because the main character who tells most of the story is a young woman and about the age of the narrator. So she tells it with a lot of zeal and feeling of a person about the age of the character. And I knew her ahead of time. I selected her for that role. With Overlap and the narrators that you helped me find, Scott, I actually took a lot of auditions, and I heard several people trying to read Marcus. And some of them were okay, but a lot of them, they just didn't hit it for me. I needed somebody who could sound, as Marcus does at the beginning, a little bit aloof and a little distant, but then in time, notice some changes in his voice as he softens to the reporter and he starts getting into his story. So that was really interesting. And I heard dozens of people do the voice of my characters. And they all give a different life. Not all would have been bad. Some would have been fine, but to find the right one was a really interesting process. And I think it makes a big, big difference because it conveys, if you find the right narrator, it conveys the thought I'm trying to get across, the way I imagine the character and speaking in such a way.
Yeah. As audiobook narrators, that's part of our thing, is to try and get into the head of the author as much as we can, let alone into the characters. And, you know, everybody who's listening to this that has listened to an audiobook is going to agree with my statement that the wrong narrator can kill even the finest written literature. It's that forward-looking face. And so it's so important to listen to as many options and interpretations as you can. I'm glad you got so many, because yes, when you make that decision, you're like, yes, this is the right one. I worked with an author just recently who said, it was very clever. He said, I said no to all the right people and I said yes to the right people, you know? So,
yes,
it was, or the right one, I guess. But you understand the point that it's such an important decision. And it's gotta be, we talk about this too, behind the scenes, we narrators, when we get together and talk about you authors, it's got to be so hard to give up your baby that you've put such blood, sweat, and tears into, to someone else to creatively interpret and deliver. What's that process of letting go like?
It is a little bit difficult, yes, because I don't think, excuse me, I don't think you're ever going to find a narrator who gets exactly what you have in mind. There'll be a scene where the characters are talking and I just didn't quite get the inflection I was thinking in that. In fact, I had to redo a couple of scenes with Colony's Dawn where the emotion wasn't there and it wasn't picked up. And actually it kind of helps me as a writer to see it. Am I writing it with the emotion that I want? Because if my narrator doesn't pick it up, would my reader? So it's a learning experience also, I think, for the author to see, well, why did the narrator do it that way? Maybe it's not clear, the emotion I'm conveying. So it helps me even to improve the writing, to make it clear. It's a kind of a two-way process between the author and the narrator, I think.
Yeah. Well, let's spend some time kind of hearing how it all came together. Let's listen to a sample of Overlap, The Lives of a Former Time Jumper. In this scene, we're going to hear Marcus, portrayed by Tom Hare, and Jessica, narrated by Heidi Hausch. Can you kind of set this scene for us?
So in this scene, it's early in the book. They're just met each other, and we've learned a little bit of the backstory of Marcus from chapter one. And now Jessica has come, and they're starting the interview, and they're just kind of getting to know each other, and they're starting this back and forth where Marcus at first is not very, he carries himself with pride for his knowledge and for his inventions, but not as a person. And that starts to come through. And that's where Jessica starts, I think, investigating a little bit to see first how he thinks of himself, and their interactions in the first couple of chapters they're in together really focus heavy onto that.
Excellent. Let's listen to this sample.
A slit in my chair's worn crimson leather sighed as the topic fidgeted me some. They say it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. I supposed there's truth in that. But to make that my truth, I must add how such a love could never be replaced. To honestly say Ellie was the love of my life, she remains the only one.
And is her death what started you on your work? Did you devote 2 decades of your life to inventing time travel in hopes of saving her?
Though I paused in contemplation, I'd had the answer ready for 40 years. Could there have been a nobler motivation?
I admit, I didn't expect such romantic notions when this interview began. I had learned, of course, of your wife's tragic death and assumed it was part of the impetus. But as your work has made you one of the world's wealthiest people, I assumed financial gain drove you to hide in a lab for 19 years.
It left me strangely intrigued how Miss Matthews set the tablet on the sofa cushion beside her and jotted the odd point here or there in a paper notebook with a pencil. Indeed, she must have wondered why I granted her, of all people, this interview. Hide myself. She was clever, carefully considering her words, but shooting them out in feigned spontaneity. I'd chosen well. And what do you suppose I missed out there in the real world? I endured the Trump and Biden years, but happily avoided the mess that came not long after. Turns out the world is still steeped in prehistoric human mentality. I crossed my legs and raised my glass to float smoky notes of my favorite Isla whiskey through stimulated nose hairs, studying the squint my words pressed onto the reporter's eyes. To this day, we have yet to find a cure for the cancer of racism in human society. I missed the riots over unification with the UK and the obliteration of 3 Islamic states. No, Miss Matthews. Financial gain had nothing to do with me hiding myself, as you said.
You really see the world through such a cynical lens?
Oh, it's a well-earned negativity, as any thinking person would agree. I merely mean to convey to you my true motivations. You see, my inventions were not driven by profit, and my only splurging of any prosperity from there has been this home. Jessica Matthews uncrossed her legs and set her forearms on her thighs.
This house, lovely as it is, doesn't seem much of a splurge, Mr. Hollister.
Miss Matthews, Jessica, let's dismiss the formalities. Call me Marcus. I may have the years and grays to go with them, but believe me, I do not merit such respect.
But, sir,
she straightened in her seat.
Your accomplishments changed the world, created a new industry, an entirely new and safe means of recreation and vacationing, improved our nation's military, and made you filthy rich. And you live in isolation in this modest 4-room home in the middle of nowhere.
What is the point of money and fame but to buy the life one wishes to live?
And there you have it, a bit of overlap, the lives of a former time jumper. It's written by N. Joseph Glass. It is available on Amazon, Audible, and Apple Books. It runs about 4 hours, 55 minutes, so it's a short, concise listen, but well worth the time spent. So, Neil, I love how there's no narrator in the story. It's written from the first person of Marcus's view. So we're kind of in his head and hearing his voice as he is in the moment. Such an interesting decision. Can you talk about how that decision came about?
Yeah, I wanted to be in his head. I wanted the whole story to be from his perspective, even how he sees Jessica. In fact, one of my readers said, you might want to, you know, think about giving Jessica some negative points because, you know, she has no flaws. It's not exactly true. There are some flaws brought out, but it's how he sees her. And it's sometimes there's one point where he starts to see her in a negative vein. And so nothing's changed in her character, but his perspective changes. And then it changes again after that. So I wanted everything to be in the head of a single character, because that's how we go through life, isn't it? I mean, we don't jump in other people's heads. We go through life and we know a perspective. Somebody looks at us a certain way, we have to assume what that look means or ask them. So that's kind of the perspective I really wanted, is what's in his head after his life and make that come through. Even in how we see Jessica, we see her through his eyes.
Yeah. Both of these characters go through dramatic changes in this book, as you've been talking to. What changes do you hope your listeners or your readers go through as they read the book or listen to the audio?
I hope people get the idea that, one, decisions we make, sometimes they can't be avoided. Sometimes we have to face them head on. We can't live in the past. None of us can create a machine and become time jumpers. But like Marcus, some of us might struggle to let go, to move on, to live our life. And that's a big part of it. A lot of us deal with loss, grief, and other things that Marcus goes through, and we handle them differently. And there may not be a right or wrong for different people, but we might learn a little bit from Marcus about the need to move forward, to find redemption, and to live life. And also, I think that there is hope. There is redemption. We don't get stuck. We can't be defined by moments in our life, but we can define our lives around the choices that we make.
Excellent. So as people want to know more about you, more about your writing, and keep up with both, how do they find you out there in that whole world of internet space?
Well, I'm in a lot of places, but the best place to go really besides my Amazon page would be to go to glassauthor.com. I have a newsletter that I don't send out too much. Don't want to pester people, but I do use that method to keep them up to date on new things. I have a nice project I'm working on now that will actually be released first exclusively to subscribers on my website. And it's going to take them through a journey of exploring through a slightly science fiction story, the world we live in now that's starting to get more and more influenced by social media and the effects that that could have, where it could go. And so that's going to be released in chapters, or actually in sections, to my subscribers first before I do anything with it publicly. So if you want to keep up, want to see what I've already written, what I'm working on, glassauthor.com is the best place to go, and sign up for the newsletter there.
Glassauthor.com. Excellent. You know, before I let you go, I've got to ask you, N. Joseph Glass, how did you come up with that pseudonym?
I was trying to think of what would work, and N. Joseph is parts of my actual name. But living in Italy, especially when I first came here, I relied a lot on Google Translate. And my last name, which comes from an Italian name, gets translated sometimes by Google incorrectly because it's very close to the word vetro, which is glass. So sometimes I was filling out a form and Google Translate called me Mr. Glass. So I thought, what better pen name to come up with than N. Joseph Glass? And it seemed to work.
That's a great story. I'm going to have to type my name into Google right after this, because who knows, I could be Mr. Handsome Good Looking from now on.
Could be.
Oh, I have a face for audiobooks. Well, N. Joseph Glass, it has been so nice talking with you today and getting to hear more about your books and your career, particularly Overlap. We all wish great things for you. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Scott. I really enjoyed it.
Well, once again, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank N. Joseph Glass for his time today. And I'm so glad that you were able to hear from Heidi Hausch, the gold medalist for the Independent Book Publishers Association Benjamin Franklin Audiobook of the Year. And if you are an author who would like to have an audiobook produced by this award-winning team, or maybe you're a narrator who would like to join us and narrate books on our behalf, please reach out to me, Scott, at scottellisreads.com. Thanks again for your time with this episode this month. We'll see you again soon.